Hey, it's Mike McEntee. It's Tuesday. We're going to call it Take Action Tuesday on the show today. We have stories of two and perhaps more of people taking action to fix something they see as wrong, action that sometimes takes maybe a long time to make change. Well, right now on the Minnesota House floor, there's a sit-in going on, organized by Representative Erin May Quaid.
And so I don't know what else to do except sit here on this floor and tell the stories of the victims and survivors of gun violence who deserve to have their stories told in this chamber, in their house. So starting right now, I will be on this floor for the next 24 hours telling the stories that deserve to be told in this chamber. We should pass this policy. 90% of Minnesotans support it.
And what do 90% of Minnesotans support that the Republican majority in the legislature won't take action on? Criminal background checks for all gun sales. At 4:35, we're going to talk to Representative Erin May Quaid from her sit-in on the House floor. But first, a story of nearly three-year-long fight for the public's right to know. Democracy does go dark when people can't find out what the government is doing. In 2015, journalist Tony Webster made a data request of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office that should have been a simple email search, but it took an order from the Minnesota Supreme Court to make it happen. Joining us now is Tony Webster. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you on here. This is an interesting tale. I just kind of want to take people through it. What was it that you wanted to know, and why did you want to know it?
Sure. So back in the summer of 2015, so about 3 years ago, I was doing research into law enforcement's use of biometric technology. So that's like eye scanners and face recognition cameras. I sent out data requests to a bunch of agencies in town, and most of them got back to me pretty quickly. But the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office was really quite stubborn with the request and took several months and wouldn't really give me an update, and I didn't know what was going on. At that point, we didn't really know if they were using this technology or not, because there hadn't been any information that was public. And finally, after really long waits, they said, your request is too burdensome to comply with, and we're not going to give you this data you're looking for. So that kind of started off, you know, a lawsuit. I did not want it to be a lawsuit, but after giving them several chances to work with me and trying to reduce the scope of the request, finally ended up filing a lawsuit in early 2016, and I won in that lawsuit. It was determined that the request was not actually all that burdensome. At the point that I sued, it would have taken them about 18 hours of computer time to do an email search. But they said they didn't want to do it. They claimed they didn't have any obligation to search their emails. I won that case, and then it went up. The county appealed it to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I won there as well. And then just last week, the Minnesota Supreme Court upheld a court order requiring the county to comply with that request. And so now, after almost 3 years later, I'll finally get to see the data that I asked for.
Wow. What does the law say about access to public data, and why is it important that we have access to it?
Well, the law says it has to be prompt, first of all, and 3 years is not prompt. It also emphasizes how important it is. The only way we know what government is doing is by asking questions. And in this case, I wanted to find out if this technology was being used, in particular because there had been a problem where we oftentimes didn't know technology was happening until someone went and asked. And it's these types of public records requests that are really important to the foundations of our democracy. And the law says that compliance with those requests has to be prompt and reasonable. And in this case, the Supreme Court upheld that it wasn't. And that's a really important decision.
Now, you mentioned that you didn't have problems with other counties when you asked for this information. Why did Hennepin County want to fight it? You said that they thought this was burdensome. Was that the only reason?
Well, my opinion of this kind of changed over time. At first, I really had no idea, and I thought, well, there must be something really juicy in there they don't want me to see. But over time, I've realized that, in particular, the county attorney's office, Hennepin County Attorney, has used this case to really fight for a lot of things that they haven't been able to get at the legislature. So for years, they've been wanting exceptions in the law to be able to turn away people asking for records, and they've never been able to get that at the legislature. And I think they really used this case to just try to get every exception they could, and they didn't get any. So I really saw this as more of a political fight than it should have been. And that's not what I wanted. You know, I asked for data and finally get it. But I really think that this was lawmaking that should happen at the legislature, but instead the county attorney, you know, tried to do lawmaking at the Supreme Court.
Now, you won this in lower court, but you still pushed on to the Minnesota Supreme Court. Why did you want to take it further than the lower court?
Yes, this is a really interesting case procedurally. I did win at the lower court, and it was the county that appealed to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. And in this case, there were multiple violations that the lower court had found, and really, the number of violations isn't as important as the big picture, which is I asked for data, did not get it. But some of these violations were in terms of they didn't have adequate procedures, and that's really important to the big picture. The Court of Appeals, you know, affirmed that my request was valid and that they broke the law, but they said, you know, their procedures are fine. And so I then pushed on to the Minnesota Supreme Court questioning that and asking them to look into this defense of the county saying, you know, this request was burdensome when it wasn't. And so that's why we went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did find that those procedures were deficient, and then they didn't make any determinations on the burdensome issue. And so the previous order that I won was upheld then.
So you did win. Did you get the data? And what did you find when you got it?
Well, no, I don't have the data yet. So what I have part of it. So back in 2016, when I won at the lower court, the judge ordered them to start giving me some data. And I did find some really interesting things, and I wrote about them. You know, discovered for the first time that the sheriff's office has been using facial recognition technology for several years they had been. And that they were exploring some potential ways to expand that and to bring in the databases of other neighboring counties into this system and be able to do searches on it. And this is completely unregulated technology. So I did find a lot about that, and I also saw some interesting conversations where sheriff's office staffers were actually mocking the fact that the public didn't know about this. In fact, citing a local news article that had been written by someone saying that this technology wasn't in use and laughing at that and saying, well, you know, yeah, it is, but it's best to stay out of the limelight. And so I saw a lot of interesting things, but when the county appealed, that court order was stayed. So it was put on hold until the end of this appeal, which in this case, you know, added a couple of years on. And so now that stay until the resolution will be lifted, but it'll take some time for that to happen. So hopefully I'll be able to see the rest of this data here in the next, you know, 1 to 2 months.
Now, I know when you brought that up, when you got that information out there, some people in the legislature took notice, and then there was suddenly talk of regulating the biometric recognition in of data and sharing of data. Has anything with that happened at the legislature? Because there's so many bills going on up there, I don't get to keep track of them all.
Yeah, it's been discussed. As of right now, there hasn't been any, there's no bills in terms of facial recognition. There was a more generic bill that just kind of said that the use of surveillance technology generally must be public, and that was really an effort to make sure that the public knows that the technology is in use. There was a secondary sort of fight that happened as part of this, which is the topic of email retention, which might sound like a really boring subject, but in the midst of this lawsuit, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office really quietly changed their policy so that they start automatically deleting emails after 30 days. And I had a lot of concerns with that because oftentimes in government, you know, you don't know that you need to look into something until well beyond 30 days have passed. And so that has become something that has been discussed with the legislature, and there's been some bills discussing requiring governments to hold on to those emails longer, because in this case, if it's taking me, you know, up to 3 years to find this information, yeah, I want to make sure that none of that gets deleted.
Do you think that...
Sorry, go ahead.
Do you think Sheriff Stanek was doing this in direct response to the request that you had made, and this is what prompted him, or is it, it's pretty much impossible to tell, is it?
I have no specific reason to know what the motivation is. You know, I think that the timing of it makes it clear that it's a response to this litigation, and I've certainly heard that comment from others. But, you know, regardless of what prompted it, I do think that it's the incorrect response of government to, you know, when you get sued and you're told that by a court that you've broken the law, you know, the response should be, well, let's come into compliance with the law and let's try to be more transparent. And instead, what we're seeing is, you know, oh, well, if people want data, let's just not have data anymore and then we won't have a problem. And that's really not a good response in terms of, you know, a government that should be transparent. So I am concerned about that. I do think it was a response to this litigation, but regardless of why it happened, and I'm concerned that it is happening.
We're speaking with Tony Webster. He's a journalist who made a simple request for some emails from the Hennepin County Sheriff and ended up fighting almost 3 years and going to the Minnesota Supreme Court to win his case. He just did win recently. So I got to ask you, Tony, what precedent does this case set? It's a Supreme Court ruling. What kind of message does it send to people?
So that's a really interesting thing. You know, it was hard going into this. First of all, when I went into this case, I did not think this would go to the Supreme Court. In fact, I was really hoping that after suing, they'd realize I wouldn't go away and we'd be able to work out some agreement. So I didn't think it would go as far as it did. At the Supreme Court, though, it was difficult to tell, are they going to put forth this groundbreaking precedent on electronic data management? You know, a lot of people within government were speculating that this opinion could be a really big deal and could really shake things up. I don't think it did. I think it sent a message that it's very important to comply with the law and to have appropriate procedures to handle data requests. You need to know what data you have within government before someone asks to see the data, and you need to handle those requests promptly. And so I really see this as strengthening the foundations of the law. It didn't send, you know, it didn't create any rules, I should say, around, you know, here's what you should or shouldn't do. And I think that's good. We have the law that we have, and it's the legislature's responsibility, and also the commissioner of administration in the state has some authority to issue opinions where the law might be vague. And those are great systems that work. And I think in this case, it's important that you know, those systems, those opinions, and the plain language of the law was upheld.
Do you think it's going to be easier for you and other journalists or just anybody to get data from Hennepin County in the future because of this, or is it going to be more difficult?
So I guess I have good news for the county and bad news for the sheriff's office data. As a county, over the past year or so, I really have seen an improvement. They recently implemented a data portal where journalists, members of the public can go and submit their requests. And I have noticed that staff have been, you know, updating those requests more often, and I've heard that from others, so I know it's not just me. At the sheriff's office, I really think it's a different story. I wish I could say they've learned from this, but I have made several requests, you know, over the past couple of years, and unfortunately, it appears to me that they've just become more and more stubborn and been giving me more and more evasive responses. And I don't know what to do about that. I'm troubled, but I am at least happy at what I'm seeing at the county.
Now, you're a solo journalist. That's kind of where I operate a lot, too. Do journalists from the larger media run into these same kind of problems?
Well, you know, I think that this is a really big question because it really depends on what research you're doing. I mean, for someone who's doing breaking news coverage, it's a little bit more about access and getting information quickly as compared to someone who might be doing more in-depth research and you know, investigative stories that might take more than a year to work on. I think in terms of the research that involves a lot more investigation, I think that it's important that we do have a strong law. And I think this case, you know, does show that government can't just make up excuses to not comply with the request. In this case, I mean, there were, I think, maybe 24, you know, legal excuses that the sheriff's office and county attorney made in terms of why they didn't feel they should comply. And every single one of those was thrown out. And so I guess I think about this in terms of, you know, Minnesota does not have a lot of litigation in terms of freedom of information issues. And I think that's generally good. But one problem that comes from that is that there's a lot of gray areas in the law. And for both government and the public, when there's a gray area, that's not good because it means that both sides are kind of going against each other, unsure what to do or unsure who's right. And so in other states where you have more litigation, a lot of these problems have been solved. So I think in terms of journalism generally, journalists tend to not, you know, have money and resources to go fighting these things. And I'm really thankful that I had pro bono counsel in this case, but I really hope that people don't have to sue to get that. I really hope that this doesn't become a norm in this state.
You said you had pro bono help here. Legal expenses just must have been incredible if indeed you had to pay for it. How much would this have cost if somebody wasn't doing it pro bono for you?
So I think the number is going to be over $100,000 on my side. We'll know the number soon, but it's a lot. And one area where the law is not working is that we have this expedited route to enforce the law through the Office of Administrative Hearings, where you go before an administrative law judge. And it still takes a lot of work to prepare this case, but they have a cap of $5,000 in attorney's fees. And that's just not enough when you're dealing with exhibits and you're having testimony from you know, witnesses on the stand. $5,000 does not begin to cover the cost of a case like this. And so I do think that the law needs some revision to make sure that, you know, data requests don't turn into something that can drag on for years and for the public to be on the hook for this kind of money and attorney's fees.
Yeah, this has been a long fight, almost 3 years of, you know, of your life on and off. What have you learned from this? And if you knew what you know now when you started, would you do it all over again?
I have more gray hair now. You know, I've it's difficult what my takeaways from this are. You know, I think I'm a little bit more depressed at this point than I was in the beginning because I really thought that, you know, we have this law that, you know, lets me sue them if they're breaking the law and it's going to be super easy. And it wasn't. Like, even though I won, having gone through all of this effort and now I'm going to get this data in the next couple of months, 3 years old at this point, you know, will that data even be newsworthy anymore? Is a question on my mind, and then I have to wonder if this was worth it. So I think what I've learned is that we do need some changes to the law, and that I've also become a little bit concerned over, you know, in this case, my request was doing research. It wasn't for any sort of political purpose, but the sheriffs in the state are an elected position. And if you can imagine any elected official, you know, coming into office, you send them a request and you don't find out what you asked for until basically the end of their term, that's really damaging to our democracy. And so I think if I've learned anything, it's that we need to completely revamp how this system works to make sure that when you ask for data, you can't basically be told to fight for 3 years to get it.
Well, Tony, I know there's a lot of people, you're out there fighting, but a lot of people are standing behind you, helping you, and hoping that you're successful in these quests that you make, trying to get data public and getting it out to everybody. And I appreciate the work that you're doing. People can find what you're doing over at TonyWebster.com. And you're an interesting guy to follow. That's one of the best things I can say about somebody is that you do good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Tony, thank you so much. We'll have to catch up later again on some of these other projects that you're working on.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break here. But when we get back, we're going to talk about Donald Trump, one of the finest people he's ever met. You know, when he says that person's probably not long for his cabinet. In this case, he's probably not in his cabinet. We'll talk about that next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. AM 950 listeners know I've been a big supporter of the station. I'm also a job creator. I've assembled a team of the highest quality technicians to ensure our reputation continues to grow. After all, a job creator is simply someone who responds to customer demand. That demand has remained strong at PJW because we deliver quality the first time around. See why it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. Our weekly Native American talk radio show will discuss national and local Native American news and events. Local and national guests will help us keep current with Mother Earth, tribal, and Twin City issues. Native American issues are human issues. We invite all people to walk hand in hand with our struggles, victories, and achievements. Listen Saturdays at 2 p.m.
I am awake.
Attention, Yards of America. Now you have a holiday, too. Toro Days at the Home Depot. With the best prices of the season on the latest Toro push mowers, zero-turn mowers, blowers, and trimmers. To celebrate, come in now for $25 off any Toro self-propelled walk-behind mower. Then, get outside and enjoy the holiday. The best prices of the season on Toro. Happy Toro Days from the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Offers valid April 19th through May 2nd.
Hey, welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. You know, when President Donald Trump calls you one of the finest people that he has ever met, maybe you should just, get a different job. President Trump acknowledged today that Dr. Ronnie L. Jackson, his nominee to lead the Veterans Affairs Department, is in serious trouble. There are allegations that he oversaw a hostile work environment as the White House doctor, allowed the overprescribing of drugs, and possibly drank on the job. Speaking at a news conference today with the president of France, Trump strongly defended Jackson as, quote, one of the finest people that I have ever met. But he hinted that Dr. Jackson may soon withdraw from consideration, blaming Democrats for a mounting of unfair attack on his nominee's record.
I told Admiral Jackson just a little while ago, I said, what do you need this for? This is a vicious group of people that malign, and they do, and I live through it. We all live through it. You people are getting record ratings because of it, so congratulations. But I said, what do you need it for? He's an admiral. He's a great leader. And they question him about every little thing. I said, what do you need it for? So he'll be it's totally his decision, but he'll be making a decision.
Yeah, he'll be making a decision. But that sounds very much like Trump's already decided that this isn't going to work out. Trump angrily accused Democrats on Capitol Hill of going after Jackson because they had failed to block Mike Pompeo, the president's nominee, to become the next Secretary of State. The concern over Jackson's nomination, though, isn't just by the Democrats. It's bipartisan. The Senate Veterans Affairs Committee launched its investigation last week, and the committee's Republican and Democratic leaders jointly announced today that Dr. Jackson's confirmation hearing planned for this tomorrow is going to be postponed indefinitely. Now, at the Minnesota legislature, we've been waiting for maybe more weeks here for the Republican tax proposal. And that's important because this is a year that everything changes because the federal tax laws changed so big, made so many changes. Minnesota has to do what's called conformity, I should say. And while that sounds boring, it could make your taxes very difficult. It could make them much higher. It could make them much lower. It all kind of depends on what happens with it. And today, the revenue commissioner and the manager for tax policy both were going to testify at the House Tax Committee about the Republican tax proposal. We got some of the comments that they're going to be making today, and here they are. It says, the Minnesota Republican tax proposal, unfortunately, this bill, like the federal tax law passed last year, provides more for businesses than for working families when it comes to rate reduction. Get that, more for businesses than for Minnesota families. That's what the analysis of this bill says. It says, although it changes income tax rates for both individuals and corporations, for individual, the bill provides a 0.3% rate cut for the second tier, but a 0.7% rate cut for corporations. That means the cut in rate for corporations, 7.6%, is nearly double that for individuals, which is 4.3%. This is all on top of a 40% tax cut rate corporations already received on their federal taxes. So in other words, if the Republicans are trying to sell this to you, just like President Trump did, that this is a great thing for families and it's for average Minnesotans, don't believe them. The real money in this tax conformity bill is for businesses. And Governor Dayton says that, you know, already said that last session they gave much too much to businesses already, and he'd like to claw some of that back. So this is putting the Republicans and Governor Dayton on a collision course here with less than 5 weeks left of the legislature. Governor Dayton again reminded Republicans today that there will be no special session. And so if they don't talk to him ahead of time and give him something that he's not going to veto at the very last minute because they turn in their paperwork so late, if they do that, there's going to be a mess. Your tax forms will look like a mess next year because of all of the things that you'll have to go through to figure it out. And then the blame game will begin. It's a question of who it's going to stick to. Well, coming up next year, we're going to talk about another game that's going on at the Capitol. This is the game of hide the bill. The gun bills that we really haven't seen at the legislature, the ones talking about background checks. Oh yeah, they had one hearing, but they're stuck on the table someplace and they're not going anywhere, even though 90% of Minnesotans agree that this is something that needs to be done. There's a sit-in going on right now at the state legislature. We're going to be talking to the organizer of that, Aaron May Quaid, Representative Aaron May Quaid, coming up here in just a few minutes on the Mike McEntee Show. We'll be back here in just a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
At Warner's Deli, we love appliances and our customers. They demand the best, and we wouldn't have it any other way. In appreciation, we put hundreds of appliances on sale at our lowest price, which we guarantee. Now through April 30th, choose from laundry pairs, dishwashers, French door refrigerators, grills, and more kitchen suites than you can count, all at our guaranteed lowest price. Our trusted delivery and installation specialists will get your appliances delivered and installed fast and right. We're Warner's Deli, Minnesota's appliance specialists.
This spring, the early bird gets more than the worm. They'll also get triple savings from Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. That's right, you can triple your savings in April when you purchase a new furnace and air conditioner. Go for the HVAC hat trick by saving up to $900 three times. Take advantage of utility rebates, manufacturer rebates, and April savings. April is the only month Standard Heating is offering the HVAC hat trick triple savings, so don't wait. Details at standardheatingdeals.com. Some restrictions apply. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood-burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that
hey, welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. As I mentioned at the top of the show, our theme today is Take Action Tuesday. Actions, not a word associated with gun background checks at the legislature. That is why Representative Erin May Quaid decided to do what she was doing today. She and several other lawmakers from both parties are holding a sit-in on the floor of the Minnesota House calling for criminal background checks on gun sales. Joining us right now is Representative Erin May Quaid from the Minnesota House of Minnesota House floor. Representative Quaid, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So as I was kind of bumbling through reading this, and I'm sorry about that, tell us, in your own words here, what's the problem that we're facing at the legislature and in Minnesota that's just not getting solved, and that's why you're doing what you're doing?
Well, you know, on Friday was the 19th anniversary of Columbine. I was in middle school in Columbine, and students walked out of their schools on Friday, and they marched to the Capitol. And then on Sunday, the Star Tribune released a poll saying that 90% of Minnesotans support background checks, criminal background checks on all gun sales. And so yesterday I was just struck with this urgency that a policy that 90% of Minnesotans support has not gotten a vote on this floor. And we've had more demonstrations on the steps of this Capitol than we've had votes on this issue. And so I just decided I needed to do something. I know that members of the public, if they had the power and privilege of an election certificate like I do, they would be doing everything they could. They already are. So I figured I would sit on this floor and I would tell the stories of the Minnesotans we've lost to gun violence, because their stories deserve to be heard on this floor.
Now, it's not just you sitting on the floor. I've seen some photos that people are putting up, and I hear voices in the background. Who else is with you?
We have so many people with us. I'm afraid to start naming names because I'm afraid I'll miss them, but I've had Peter Fisher here with me, and Rena Moran, and Lori Halverson, and Sandy Mason, and Liz Olson, and Cheryl Joachim, and Karen Clark, and Tina Liebling, and Lori Pryor, and Mike Freiberg, and Fu Lee, and Ray Dean, and Dave Pinto, who authored the bills we're talking about. We've had some senators come over. We had Sosinski over here. We had Senator Hayden over here, and Senator Torres Ray, Senator Matt Klein, Representative Dario Anselmo, who's a Republican, joined us for a while. He's been back twice. People are coming and going as their schedules allow.
And you've asked people to tell stories. What stories are they telling? What are you hearing from people?
Well, Cheryl Joachim just shared a story about Sami Rahamin's dad. He owned a store and was shot and killed in, I believe, the... Oh, gosh. Cheryl, when was Sammy's dad shot? And I shared stories about Burdell Beeks, who was shot in 2016, about Chase, who was shot in a law office in 2016 as well. And these are all deaths that we could have prevented.
Now, what you're doing isn't what we're used to on the U.S. Senate, which is a filibuster. You're just holding a sit-in. What are you hoping to accomplish, yeah, and why are you doing it this way?
Well, this is, you know, kind of the only power I have right now, is the power to speak and the power to tell these stories. You know, we haven't had a bill up for me to speak to regarding this issue, and we don't really have the filibuster in the Minnesota House. So mm-hmm. I figured I would sit here and I would just keep telling the stories. And if people wanted to come into the gallery and hear the stories or send me more, I would do that. But I think it's really about being, to show that every student who's walked out of their classroom, every person who's made a call or written a letter or showed up on the steps of the Capitol, to let them know that their urgency is shared with legislators on the inside of the Capitol, even if they're not seeing movement on these bills.
Do you have to get any special permission to do this? I mean, you are an elected official. This is the Minnesota House floor. Theoretically, you should be able to do what you want. Are you breaking any decorum rules by doing this?
I don't believe so. The speaker does control the floor, so I suppose if he wanted me to leave, he could order them to have me removed. But I am allowed to be here as a legislator. And, you know, I'm sitting. I'm not sleeping on the floor. I'm not laying on the floor. I take my job very seriously, and I have a reverence for what I do. And so I'm sitting mindfully here on the floor. I brought a book for later on this evening.
Later on this evening. So this is, you said this is a 24-hour sit-in. So you're intending to be there until tomorrow morning, tomorrow
at
afternoon?
At 11:30. Yep.
Okay. Can other people come down to the House floor, or is it just legislators? What's the rules
so
on that?
There are legislators on the floor right now. There were people who came and visited throughout the day when the building was open. The building closes at 5. But it'll open again tomorrow, and people can certainly come visit then or come say hi from the gallery. I hope they do.
Now, I saw posted online here that Protect Minnesota, one of the groups that is very much in favor of the laws that you're talking about, is planning to hold a rally at 7 o'clock. Have you heard that as well?
I heard that. I think they're going to be doing it on the steps, and hopefully they cheer loud enough for me to hear them in here.
Okay. So the other folks that have been hanging with you, you heard their stories. Are you getting the feeling that there's any movement happening because of this? Because a lot of this is falling on the Republican Party here. I should say your Republican colleagues, because, I mean, I'm broadly generalizing here, but that seems to be where the rubber is not meeting the road.
I mean, yeah, that's where the issue is. And I want them to know that 90% of Minnesotans support this. This is it's a common sense gun legislation that is supported by 90% of Minnesotans. And truthfully, it concerns me that there's a policy supported by that many Minnesotans that can't get a vote on the floor. I want them to know that there is support for this, and we should be voting on the policies that are important to Minnesotans. And they have done their work showing us that it's important to them, and that I just have the urgency they have too. So I'm going to sit here for 24 hours and tell their stories and let them know that I'm listening.
Now, I see that Senator Ron Lantz is planning to hold a news conference tomorrow. He's had several gun violence prevention amendments, and he is going to be pushing them on the floor on Thursday. Have you chatted with him about what he's up to?
You know, I haven't, but I invited the senators to come over to the floor if they want to you know, see me. There is that division. Senators think the House members are a little bit rambunctious. This might be why. I'm really appreciative of the work that he's doing. And Representative Pinto in the House has carried those same bills, too, and they're doing really wonderful work. This is how I want to contribute to what they're doing. Lift it up.
Now, it's been a while since you've been in high school. It's been forever since I've been in high school. I actually went to high school with Peter Fisher, by the way. We went to the same.
You did.
We were different years, but right, you know, he was a senior, I was a junior, or something like that. But you've been more recently in high school than I have been. Yet what is going on in high schools right now, in schools, is foreign to you as well. And you were talking about that earlier today.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best things about representing the community I was raised in is I share a lot of the same experiences with my students, the students that are in school now. They have the same teachers that I had, or some of my friends are their teachers now. And, you know, we love joking about how Mr. Dama conducts the choir or how Mr. Sexton does his displacement experiment in science. But one of the things we don't have in common is lockdown drills. I never did a lockdown drill, and it breaks my heart that they are doing these in schools. And I don't want it to be that way. We can take proactive measures to reduce gun violence in our state, and we should.
Yeah, I posted up your video of you talking about why you were doing this. You can find that, by the way, over at the Uptake's Facebook page and AM950's Facebook page. And immediately I got people responding, way to go, Aaron, thank you. But then questions, what can I do? What can I do to support this? What's your answer to people when they say that?
Well, I want everyone to know that they're already doing really good work, that the calling, the writing, the protesting, the marching, the demonstrating, the walkouts, you know, it's showing the support that exists for us in the community. If they live in a district where they're not sure how their legislator feels, call them, write them, and tell them to support this bill. We should really be putting pressure on legislators now. We should take this bill up this week and vote on it. They can join any one of the groups, the gun violence prevention groups that are here in the state. There's Moms Demand Action, there's Protect Minnesota. Survivors Lead sent me the stories, and they're a group that's survivor-oriented and centered. And so if someone is a survivor of gun violence, to join their group as well. And then just continue elevating this issue. I don't want it. I'm hoping that this isn't an issue that just falls away because, you know, just enough time passed. And I think what my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are starting to realize is this isn't going away. These students aren't going away. These moms aren't going away. These parents aren't going away. Minnesotans aren't going away on this issue. And keep up the pressure, because it is working.
That sounds a lot like information that people should be thinking about when they go to vote in 2018. How big of an issue do you think this is going to be at this November for, you know, legislative races?
So I'll tell you, when I started door knocking in 2015, 2016, I had people tell me that this was important to them, but it wasn't their only issue. I had a few people tell me that it was their only issue, but this year is a complete 180. I have people who tell me that they are now single issue voters on gun violence prevention. This is something that people will be bringing with them to the ballot box. And that's why we must move on this issue, but I think that there'll be consequences for legislators who don't.
All right. Anything else you want to tell us about what's going on down there? Anybody who wanted to chime in and tell us their story?
You know, the building is about to be closed up, so people are finishing up their meetings. But I think the rally starts at 7, and it'll be on the steps. If people can get here, they should know that I would love to hear their cheers and that I'm in here fighting for them.
All right. Representative Aaron May Quaid, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Representative Aaron May Quaid talking to us live from the Minnesota House floor, where she's holding a 24-hour sit-in that will go through, as she said, 11:30 a.m. tomorrow, asking for action on background check bills. And as I mentioned, Senator Ron Latz is going to hold a press conference tomorrow, and we will be at least carrying the audio over at theuptake.org. He has got a couple of bills that are in the Senate that would address this. The first bill would allow law enforcement to seek an extreme risk protection order, a court order restricting a person's access to gun when they show red flags or pose a danger to themselves or others. The second bill would do exactly what Representative May Quaid was talking about, extend criminal background checks to most private sales, gun show markets, and online transactions with a permit to purchase system. Well, we're going to take a break here, folks, but I'd like to know what you think about what's going on in the Minnesota House floor. Do you think it's a worthwhile activity? Do you support what Representative Quaid is doing? Give us a call. 952-946-6205 is the number here, and we'll be back in just a few moments. You're listening to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950.
Oh no, you shattered your cell phone. Now what? Listen closely. We know you're lost without your phone. Bring it to Computer Revolution today. We'll fix it and have you back online before someone asks, "Where are you?" Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair has over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones, same day, 7 days a week.
Being a dog is awesome, except when you really gotta go, but you're stuck inside. That's why I had my human call the Urban Dog. Daily walks, field trips, play groups, one-on-one time, safe off-leash play, and pet sitting. I love being an Urban Dog.
The Urban Dog works with your schedule and can create a plan that fits your needs. The Urban Dog. Exercise, explore, socialize. Let the journey begin. Call 651-231-6333. That's 651-231-6333.
The Spring St. Paul Art Crawl, presented by the St. Paul Art Collective, will be running April 27th, 28th, and 29th. This is a must-do experience that you will love. Over the weekend, you'll have the chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artist studios, lofts, and galleries. Hosting over 350 artists, up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, fiber arts, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 34 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for you to own. When you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. The Metro Transit is supporting the local art community with free transit passes. Download your pass to ride buses and light rail for free during the Art Crawl. Be sure to get details at the stpaulartcrawl.org. That's the stpaulartcrawl.org.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. 952-946-6205 is the number if you want to call and chat. We are just chatting with Representative Aramae Quaid, who, with along with about 14 or 15 more legislators, is holding a sit-in on the Minnesota House floor, saying we really want some sort of action here on gun control bills, especially one that would put in background checks. What do you think about that? First, what do you think about what they're asking? But what do you think about the tactic? Is right now the Republicans in the Minnesota legislature, and that who is who controls most of what's going on in the legislature, is the Republican majority, has really not allowed much of a hearing on this issue at all. They allowed one hearing on two bills Representative Dave Pinto had, and both those bills then were tabled. There's been no real votes on these bills. Nobody has gone essentially on the record, because in this election year, that may be a dangerous thing to say that you're opposing such measures. You can probably rail against them, but nobody can say, oh, well, he voted against that this year. What do you think? Is this the only way to get the message out, or is this a tactic that you endorse doing a sit-in? It's gotten the attention of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. They have a story on their front page about it. 952-946-6205 is the number here to call, 952-946-6205. And as I mentioned, tomorrow, Senator Ron Latz is going to be holding a press conference on a pair of gun bills that he'd like to get some traction on in the Senate. And we'll be live streaming both of those, both of that news conference over at theuptake.org tomorrow as well. Patrick from Apple Valley wanted to chime in on this. Hey, Patrick. What do you think?
Hi there. So I just wanted to say that I disagree with Aaron Quaid.
Okay.
I feel that she's misguided. I don't think that her solutions with the background checks and more stringent law enforcement, you know, policing over people with supposed red flags is going to solve the problem. We're dealing with people that are evil, people that are, you know, mentally ill, and they do violent things. But by restricting the guns, what they're advocating is for a chipping away at our freedoms. And the founders, when they set that Second Amendment in there, they said that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, because they realize the importance of people to be armed not only for self-defense, but also to, you know, rein in a tyrannical government. So her, and also, too, everything that she's proposing, I, at least, and you may differ with me, I just don't see a solution that's going to solve these problems.
Well, Patrick, let me ask you a couple things here. I don't think anybody's saying that it's going to solve the problem, but just like when you have traffic laws, they're not going to prevent people from having crashes, driving real fast, but they outline what you should and shouldn't do. I mean, this is reasonable regulation here. Isn't that what we're talking about?
Well, it may sound reasonable, but in reality, it's a chipping away. And it's a chipping away, and it's a chipping away at freedom and liberty for people to be able to purchase and have firearms.
Okay. Well, Patrick, thanks for your thoughts on that. 952-946-6205 is the number here. Phil from Golden Valley, I think, has a different view on this. Hey, Phil, how are you doing?
Hi, Mike. I'm doing all right. Thank you very much. The previous caller seems to think that if a law can't cure something completely, we shouldn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's still murderers, so maybe we shouldn't have any laws against murderers, because after all, it doesn't really solve the problem. But we do know one thing for sure. When the assault rifle ban expired, the number of mass shootings mushroomed like crazy. And we do know that if that fellow had his guns taken away in Illinois, and if Tennessee had the same law, his father giving him the guns back, he wouldn't have gotten the guns back. There should be a law that if you're judged to be mentally unstable enough to not be safe around firearms and they get taken away from you, they don't go back to your family. I mean, that's I can see lawsuits flying over that one for sure. And how come the NRA hasn't come out for the black man who unarmed, disarmed the crazy guy with the rifle?
They always he didn't have a gun, apparently.
Takes a good guy with a gun to deal with a bad guy with a gun? No, it takes a good person who has guts to disarm a person who has to, oops, I only have, oh, I ran out of bullets. I got to, whoop, this guy's coming at me. I better just, then he ran away.
Yeah.
The NRA is so full of beans on this. It's just insane. And look at Australia, everybody. When they decided to start buckling down on random weapons laying around people's houses, their murder rate by firearm plummeted. And I think it's time for the United States to consider some reasonable, rational, stiffer regulations about guns. I mean, the 3% of our country who owns lots of guns isn't going to lose all their guns.
Yeah.
And the few people who have hunting weapons are not the people who are mostly not going berserk and starting to shoot up whole neighborhoods or waffle houses or bars or restaurants.
Hey, Phil, we got to run. I agree with you. The Supreme Court has said that there is not an absolute right here and that there can be regulation. We'll be back here tomorrow. It's the Mike McEntee Show. Thanks for listening. And, Mom, thank you for listening, too.